calm before the storm. That's how I would describe it. That's how I'm feeling at the moment. Everything is everything's pretty peaceful in the world, but it's all about to unfold in front of our very eyes very soon, because Celtic are back in, you know, 2 days, less than 2 days, just over 2 days. I'll just try and work that out. And then after that, we'll have game after game after game for months, and they're all big games, and it's going to be so exciting. So we better enjoy this tranquility while we have it.
I actually woke up with that kind of nervous excitement feeling you get on a Celtic day, just this, you know, this morning, never mind Monday. I've had a few days off over this break. I've not been as plugged in as I usually am to everything going on at Celtic. But today really hit home that we're playing in 2 days. Really hit home how big a game Monday is, never mind the rest of the season. It was that nervous excitement of almost a cup final kind of feeling, where you're not nervous about, you know, not winning the game. You've just got that kind of excitement feeling again.
And all these games, as I say, are just going to come thick and fast. And, you know, we're going to be fighting across three competitions over the next few months until we get our next respite. And I think the end of March, when Scotland's World Cup playoff matches are, that's the next time we'll get any respite at all. We've got, I think, 14 matches currently scheduled between Monday and then. That'll go up to 18 if we advance in both the Scottish Cup and the Conference League. So you're fitting in a lot of matches, and a lot of them, pretty much all of them, are going to be huge, huge matches with regards to the league title. So I thought we could, well, you and I both agreed, we could take a bit of a general look at how things are going at the moment. For the one and only fan of Stevie on the channel, if you're wondering where he is, he will be back tomorrow. We're going to do a proper preview to the Hibs game. But for today, I think we're going to take a kind of wider view at where Celtic are at the moment with regards to recruitment, how's the squad looking, and how are we feeling generally as we enter phase two of the season. That is my question.
Feels like phase three or four for me. Like, it's just been, it's been a crazy. I mean, phase one for me was that initial 6 week spell when Ange first came in and we played all those games, those qualifiers. Then you're moving into phase two ahead of the League Cup final. It's such a tricky time. It's been such a tricky season already. I've already feel like we've gone through two seasons worth of football. But yeah, I agree. I think it's a good time to kind of take stock and look at the big picture of the season, what it means and what's at stake here, because I think there's perhaps a few underlying kind of storylines or narratives over the next few months that, you know, people have considered, but that are going to really come to the fore. Excited to get stuck into this.
When was the last time you enjoyed watching Celtic and were so into watching Celtic, you know, compared to this?
This season? Yeah, not for a long time. Actually, obviously the Invincible season was incredible. And that really stood out as a joy to watch week to week. And Celtic had that feeling of just being relentless. That is just so entertaining. When you're following a sports team, and especially Celtic, because they're so close to their heart and have been, you know, as we've said multiple occasions, it's a family thing, isn't it? It's something that's ingrained in us. We're not just following Celtic from afar. You know, this is everything for us. And so when a team is so relentless, you take a pride in that and you take immense satisfaction in that. I think before the Invincible season, it's actually Neil Lennon's first season in charge. I really enjoyed the football that season. I really enjoyed the fighting spirit of the team. And, you know, there was lots of off-the-field issues, shall we say, that season. You know, not just with Neil Lennon himself and the problems he and the issues he had to go through, the despicable nature of some of that, but, you know, the referee and stuff. There was just a real mentality of Celtic that season. Even though we didn't win the league, it felt like we were at the start of something new, and I feel like we're in that similar situation. So this only comes around once every few years, I think, this feeling, where you feel like you're building towards something, and you feel that Celtic are on a week-to-week journey. But that is definitely how the season is feeling at the moment, and I understand why there's a bit of trepidation going into the second half of the season, especially after, you know, dropping those points just before the break wasn't ideal, and I think a lot of supporters have been stewing on that over the break. But I do think we have seen enough signs of progress under Ange so far to be feeling confident and excited about the few months that are to follow.
Yeah, we definitely have. That first Neil Lennon season, if you actually look at that season and this season, the comparisons are there to be seen, aren't they? You know, a new hungry team with a new manager in charge, exciting football, exciting matches, even the off-field drama you touch on, we obviously, you know, pray that there's nothing as severe as that in the second half of this season. But this season has already had a lot of off-field drama. I mean, I know Scottish football at the best of times is like that, but there's real comparisons. The Invincible season's probably a good comparison as well, but so different because we were just so much better than the rest of the league. This year, we're in a real fight. And, you know, if I was weighing up, obviously I'd love to be well clear at the top of the table and winning never gets old. But this is exciting too. I mean, neck and neck, title races, the fact that there's so little margin for error, and you know, the potential reward that's at the end of the season if we can get this right. I just think it all, you know, goes together to make a really special time, and I just can't wait for it to start again. I'm absolutely buzzing. The last few weeks have been horrible without Celtic, and the fact we're going to get back into it, and it's going to be game after game after game. We've got so many different, you know, things to look forward to, so many, you know, narratives and plot lines in the season. What's going to happen with the three Japanese players? What kind of impact can they make in the second half of the season? What about the Conference League? Is that a competition Celtic can go deep in? Because I honestly think that's a competition we could, you know, win a round or two in, maybe even more. The league title, obviously. The Scottish Cup. Celtic are still on for a treble as we sit here and speak at the moment. It's just so exciting. There's so much to get into, and we'll do that in a sec.
Yeah, I mean, there's no shame in admitting we're in a fight here. I mean, I don't, Rangers have been good this season. Like, I mean, I don't think you can kind of argue against that.
They've dropped 9 points all season.
Yeah, but I also think that Gerrard leaving and Van Bronckhorst coming in, it didn't quite have that upheaval that some of us maybe thought. Or hope for, at least, I think they've been good since he's come in. So, or at least to the extent where they're winning all their matches. So, I don't think you can deny that, and there's no point in shying away from the fight. I mean, the Celtic squad certainly won't be. I mean, it's fine to admit that, and that we're in a battle, and we're 6 points behind. You can't really escape it. I mean, it's not. And I know that the majority of our poor form in the Scottish Premiership came at the start of the year. And those first 7 or so games could come and haunt us, you know, by the time May comes around. But, you know, Celtic have, you know, they drew that game against St Mirren. But those were only drop points for months. I mean, and that's why Celtic fans are so pleased with the progress. It's not, you know, 6 points behind Rangers, but in the context of the last couple of months and where those points were dropped at the start of the season, you can't deny that Celtic are on an upward trajectory. And so you're just kind of hoping for Celtic to be able to continue that first and foremost and kind of find that cutting edge in front of the goal, which I think has probably been the big problem against teams who play so defensively. I feel good about the second half of the season, but I'm not confident of, you know, I wouldn't say I was confident of winning a treble or even winning the league, because I think that confidence is still to be proven. And the big unknown factor is, of course, is that we've still to play Rangers 3 times in the Scottish Premiership. And those 3 games will obviously be defining. You know, and that's 9 points up for grabs for each team. And that's why I'm not too nervous about the 6-point gap, because those games are kind of out there for Celtic to take control of. And we've yet to see how Celtic will play against Rangers at Celtic Park this season, which is obviously a big factor too. So there's so many things coming up that have been crammed into a 3-month window of madness. And it starts on Monday, and it is pretty exciting.
Bring it on. Right, Mazar has a couple of points. The first one, were you drinking from a wolf mug just there, John?
It's actually a fox mug, so
right.
It's not Hannes Wolf hint. It's maybe a Danny Fox hint. Maybe he's coming back to Celtic Park.
Right, very nicely done. And also, Mazar, do you think there will be more incomings this transfer window? I'm not talking about loanees already. I feel there will be a superstar signing still to come. I feel like Andrew's hinting at it. John, I know you've got some thoughts.
Right, so Andrew's press conference, I thought, on Thursday was fantastic. Just for sheer entertainment value. Pulled no punches, you know, said what he wanted to say, honestly, on a variety of subjects, from transfers to Riley McGree, to all sorts of stuff. I thought it was, you know, Andrew's box office. For those who love Celtic, he's box office. For people in the media, he's box office. So when you're like us and you love Celtic and do a bit of media, it's like compounded 10 times. And I thought he was brilliant, and I thought his comments were very interesting. You know, I'm not expecting Celtic to be busy in terms of transfers incoming over the next few weeks, but I don't think Andrew's comments necessarily mean that we won't be signing anyone. I think he qualified it by saying, you know, I'm not expecting anyone to come in if the state of my squad stays the same. And you can read into that a number of ways. Does that mean we'll bring in someone if Ayeti leaves? Does that mean we'll bring in someone if Bolingoli leaves? I mean, there's things to read into that. So I think, you know, bringing players in might depend on, you know, a couple of people being shifted out, but that's fine, because I think the squad is quite bloated in a couple of areas in terms of having players in the books that aren't offering anything. So if we manage to move on some of the deadwood, would I hope and expect Celtic to sign one or two more players in key positions? I would say yes. And I don't think Andrew's comments through the week ruled that out, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah, there was two reasons he gave for why Celtic might still sign a player. The first one you've mentioned, whether, you know, if a big player leaves, I actually took that as if Celtic were to receive an offer they couldn't turn down for a key first team player. So say, you know, a bid for 30 million for Kyogo came in tomorrow, you would be selling him for that. So that's what I read it as, but it could obviously also be to do with players like Ayeti, as you say, that perhaps need to go out. And the other reason he gave was if a player who is basically too good to turn down becomes available. And I think that was the case with Riley McGree. I think that's someone he'd worked with. Well, it was someone he'd worked with in the past. And it was probably an opportunity that kind of fell in Celtic's lap and they had to take it. We obviously didn't take it in the end, or he didn't take it. But I think something like that, you know, closing days of the window, if someone like Hannes Wolf becomes available at a knockdown price or even on a loan for 6 months, I think that's the kind of thing you could see Celtic going for. But I think he was just, you know, tempering expectations a little bit. If I get this graphic up that I spoke about yesterday, the squad depth.
Yeah.
We've kind of spoken about this before in terms of bringing in players, but in terms of players you would like to see leave the club, either permanently or on loan, Andrew's keen to say that no one needs to leave, but ideally, are there any there you'd like to see moved on?
Yeah, I mean, I'd move Ayeti on. I'm kind of done with him. To be quite harsh, I'd move Bolingoli on. Done with him as well. I just don't think they're offering, you know, what Ange wants. You know, I think we'd see more. I know Ayeti's had injury problems, but he seems to have had constant fitness problems since he arrived at the club, so maybe it's just time to say goodbye. You know, Urigidi, I would see him go on loan. You know, like Liam Shaw, I'd like to see him in the Scottish Premiership on loan. And Barkas is an obvious one, because I'm sure that he's not, you know, I doubt he's earning mega money at Celtic, but you know, he's taking up some of the wage budget, and again, he's just a player not offering anything. So those are the main ones there. Like, I'm looking at the squad depth, and I'm actually not too concerned about some of it. I mean, I think a good thing considered in the centre-back area in particular is that I think Ange maybe feels a bit better about Christopher Julien than, you know, we might expect. I think, you know, there's an expectation he can offer something in the second half of the season. So for me, that lineup of four central defenders isn't too bad, certainly over the next 3 months, and then we can kind of review it again in the summer. Again, on the left, loads of people are calling for a left back, because a lot of people just don't like Greg Taylor, and that's fine. I'm not going to go on about Greg Taylor again, but Taylor and Scales isn't, you know, a desperate situation, I wouldn't suggest, for a left back, certainly domestically. And again, on the right back, you know, Josip Juranovic and Ralston is fine. And then the rest of the team, I think, is looking pretty good. I mean, the midfield area is looking strong. You know, maybe my big concern, actually, looking at the squad depth chart, and it's not a reflection of his ability, it's just James Forrest just has had constant injury issues of his own over the last 18 months, and I'm not sure if we're relying on someone in that right wing position, that perhaps we need another, you know, right sided option in attack, just to complement that whole business over there. Because if James Forrest picks up another injury, I think we're looking a little bit light there.
Yeah, and Abada has been decent so far, but is he a guy you can rely on week in, week out to be a top performer? I think he's been asked to do quite a lot. And I think Ange's gone on record as saying that Abada's probably played more football than the Celtic were expecting when we signed him. Centre mids, I mean, I'll just put it back up. There's just a given that we only play one, and obviously we don't know the state of Ediguchi or what he's going to be like. Certainly I'd like to see Sorrow moved on. Beaton, his versatility, I suppose, is quite important. But I think in general, it's quite a decent squad. Maida obviously can play up front as well. And I think the big thing from the first half of the season was our over-reliance on certain players. I think we were very reliant on Kyogo and Callum McGregor and Jota. And I think now with Maida coming in and hopefully Ediguchi, we'll be able to be less reliant on those players and have other guys that can come in and can impact it. I've said this every video for the last week, but that lack of creativity for these games, if we're missing Rogic, Hatate and Turnbull, if he's still injured, which he will be, is a mega concern, given that it's Tynecastle and Rangers and Dundee United.
I understand that. I do understand those concerns, but we can't sign three players for three games.
Do you think Ange has a plan, and what do you think it could be? I mean, Callum McGregor moving up one would be an obvious example, that's one out of the two positions.
I also think the jury is out on the Japanese selection, because, you know, a factor in the whole Japanese thing is that Kyogo's been getting selected but not really starting games, and I don't think that's been a reflection on Kyogo's ability. It's been more on the fact that he's had to travel so far, he's arriving to the Japanese squad late and, you know, might not be as best prepared for those matches as their national team boss would like. So you might find that Maeda and Hatate, they're in a similar situation, or you might find that Kyogo's, you know, more injured than we thought and might sit out the next couple of games and then kind of comes back for those games. There's a lot of problems and there's a lot of kind of hypotheticals here that it's hard to kind of get a sense of what's going to happen with those three games. Now, the Japan squad is announced next Saturday on January 22nd, so it's actually quite close.
A live reaction that day, John?
Well, I mean, it is quite difficult. You know, it is quite big news for Celtic, really. I mean, I think they've got all their domestic players are meeting up for a training camp squad this week, to the 21st, and then I think the Japan squad is announced the day after on the 22nd. So we'll find out then what's going to happen, and I don't think we can prejudge too much because there's a lot of nervousness about that, and you know, we might find it's a distraction. Let's see if these guys can play for Celtic first. You know, Monday is such a huge game, and I would like to see Hatate and Maeda in that one and see what they can offer.
I saw some reports suggesting that it was more, you know, someone's opinion rather than anything concrete, but that Celtic may really fight to keep hold of, especially Maida and Hatate, given that they haven't, I don't think that either of them have ever actually made a full Japan appearance, got a cap. But I'm assuming that FIFA laws mean that the international team has the advantage, and if they want to call the player up, the player's called up. But another thing that hopefully people would consider, you know, Japan would consider, what does Maida and Hatate, what do they want to do? Would they rather play in huge derby matches and at Tynecastle for Celtic, or let's face it, sitting a bench for Japan? I get that it's crucial for Japan and they're pretty patriotic in general in that country, but the two players will be as well, looking to get their way into the national team ahead of the World Cup that they're hoping they qualify for. But I think that's something worth considering as well. It feels like this story has a long way to go, and there's going to be a lot of twists and turns and people saying this and other people saying that. But if the worst case scenario happens and we have to play Rangers without these players, possibly Cameron Carter-Vickers as well, that's been mentioned, certainly Tom Rogic, do you have faith in Ange and, you know, the players that are there to use this kind of difficult situation to their advantage?
I think what we've seen before the break was that even with players out, Celtic are going to have, and against Betis as well, that Celtic are going to have a baseline performance of energetic football, attacking football and creating chances, almost regardless of who's on the pitch. Now, the St Mirren game you point to, and we didn't stick away chances like that. I actually thought we had two or three opportunities to get our nose in front of that game, and we didn't quite manage it, even with a depleted squad. Against St Johnstone, again, a much depleted team, played pretty well there, I thought. So obviously Rangers is a different proposition entirely, but I'm not obviously not going to wave the white flag and give in to Rangers in front of a sold-out Celtic Park, regardless of who's on the pitch. These derby games are crazy. A lot of things happens. And that team will be, whoever takes the pitch that day against Rangers will be well-backed by 60,000 absolutely fanatical people who are desperate for a victory for all sorts of reasons, not just to do with the league, but culturally and societally and everything that goes with a Celtic and Rangers game. So I would back any Celtic team against any Rangers team at Celtic Park, to be quite honest with you.
Interesting. Very good. So with Dan, and the fact we're going to have a full house there is huge when we weren't going a few weeks ago had the game been played. Right, current state of the Premiership League table as we enter the second half of the season. We're 6 points behind Rangers. We can obviously make that gap just 3 points if we get the victory over Hibs on Monday night. Rangers, by the way, go to Aberdeen the following evening, which is never an easy game for them. So things can change so quickly. We've found that out already this season, John, and so much is riding on the line this year with the league title. Obviously, all the usual stuff that goes on, the bragging rights, the glory of winning the title, and then add on another 40-odd million with Champions League group stage football almost certain for the league winner. It really is huge, and that's going to be one of the main talking points, I think, between now and the end of the season, if it hasn't already been.
Yeah, I mean, people have been talking about it, but I think it's almost only supporters that have been talking about it quite a lot. Obviously, a lot of people have been chatting to each other in conversations, but, you know, your video laid it all out as well for a lot of people. If you haven't watched that, I would go back and watch as Hamish's £40 million whatever video on the Champions League explains the situation very clearly and is very useful. I think over the next few months, it might be whipped up into a bit more of a media storm. And it's not something that Ange and the players will be taking notice of. And, you know, I don't think. But the reality is that the stakes of this season are as high for a Scottish Premiership title win as there ever has been, really. You know, obviously there was a lot riding on last year, you know, for different reasons. But in pure financial terms, there's a balance of power thing here. With this 35, 30, 40 million pounds, whatever it ends up being, and that's almost automatic guaranteed cash for this year's title winners. And I think when you have people like Stuart Robertson, who was on the Athletic Football podcast earlier this week, kind of admitting that they have been burned away 100 million pounds trying to catch up to Celtic over the last few years, I mean, you can argue about the intelligence of burning through £100 million for one trophy all you like, but the fact is that they've done it, and they need, you know, as much as Celtic need this £40 million, which I think we do, to push on and take us to the next level under Ange or you know whatever, Rangers need that money too. Like it's not a luxury. I don't think this is luxury money. I think this is money that both teams need to enact their vision over the next 3 to 5 years. And I just think that that's what makes this title race so huge and massive, and I don't think you can really underplay it. And it's a massive thing. It won't be spoken about by the players, it won't be spoken about Ange, but I don't think you can ignore it.
It won't be spoken about, are you talking publicly, by the players?
I don't think they'll be talking about it in the dressing room either, to be honest with you. I don't think they'll be sitting thinking about the £40 million that could come their way. It might, you know, become a factor, you know, as the media whip it up, as I've said, but they're not going to be taking any notice. That I don't think Ange would allow that, to be honest with you.
But they'll be talking about the prospect of getting into the Champions League next season. Callum McGregor, actually, I think it was prior to the last game against Hibs at Easter Road, when he did the fan media, and he actually mentioned the fact that, you know, one of the reasons for him signing a contract, a new contract at Celtic, was there's real opportunities here. And he mentioned, without being, you know, probed by anyone, that there's Champions League football on the line, effectively, for the league winner. And as much as you would assume the players would know that, I think it is quite, it's refreshing to know that Callum McGregor is right on top of it. And as much as the money, you know, that's an important thing for Celtic, the business, rather than Celtic, the football team, although it can obviously feed into the football team, it's great to hear that the players are aware of it. And yeah, I think it's going to be absolutely massive. People, I think, tend to overplay things just in general in life, but especially in Glasgow. You know, people saying that the league winner this year will win the league for the next, you know, 5-6 years and all that kind of stuff. I don't think that's the case at all, because we know even 40 million, you know, it's one thing having the 40 million you get for making the group stage, but it's how you spend it. And we had 2 years worth of Champions League money under Brendan Rodgers, and still Rangers managed to catch us up through our own negligence in part from their improvement. But I think it's fair to say the league winner this year will have a massive advantage over the other team from Glasgow next season. And I think part of that is why it's so important that Celtic win the league this year. We're definitely building something under Ange. Nobody now is doubting that at all. Anyone who's watched Celtic this season will know that something is building and we're on the right road. We're not even nearly there yet, but we're on the right road. And I think if we can win the league this year, find a way to win the title, It will just speed up the process so much, having that extra money. You look at the business Ange has already done. Can you imagine actually giving that guy, you know, even more money? You know, there's 5, 6, 7 million Ange going buy a player with that. So the difference that could make would be huge. And as you say, it's going to be probably the big talking point. But I thought it was really good to hear that McGregor's aware of that.
Yeah, I mean, they'll be aware of it. I mean, the Champions League football, just on a prestige thing, is huge for a club like Celtic. I mean, there's countless Champions League nights we've loved over the years, Hamish, both of us.
Not recently.
Not recently, of course, but they're just massive occasions. It's just, it's great to have Celtic involved in the group stage of that competition, even without the money and the kind of things it unlocks. But, you know, inevitably, you know, in modern football, cash opens doors, and I think doors would open for Celtic in a multitude of ways from the summer if we do land that kind of cash. And I think it sets us up for a new beginning almost. Andrew's bringing in backroom staff. You know, there's players arriving that, you know, ostensibly for the long term, it could be crucial in convincing a player like Jota to stay in Glasgow, etc. So it's not just about the money, it's about everything that goes along with it. And I think, you know, it's such a huge kind of undercurrent to the obvious rivalry of pushing Rangers for a league title. You know, it's massive. And again, Hamish, I'll bring it all back. It all starts on Monday night, doesn't it? I mean, that's, you know, I don't think Celtic can afford any slip-ups, especially early on. And I think we have to win, you know, all our games up to, including the derby at least, and then kind of see where we are. Because I think slipping up at this stage would just kind of feed into, I know, a kind of anxiety that kind of perpetuates itself. So we need to win, and we need to win starting on Monday night.
Because you can see that dream world where Celtic win the league and we're automatically into the Champions League group stage. And we, by the way, we don't have to worry about qualifiers at all. We can do what we want in the summer, basically. Pre-season matches, fill your boots, go away. Well, maybe that's a little bit too far, but we could maybe go over to Japan or somewhere like that if COVID allows, or Australia, and not have to worry about these qualifiers that have plagued our summers over the last, I don't know, 12 seasons, and have that group stage football, have the financial advantage over our rivals in the city, who would then definitely have to sell players. I think it's fair to say they're banking on winning the league this year, quite literally. As you say, we see that dream world, but there's a lot of stuff to go through till we get there. I think the old sayings are, if it wasn't, I'm going to butcher this saying now, if it wasn't worth winning, it wouldn't be worth fighting for, or something like that.
Right, we'll move on from that. But no, but seriously, you can see that dream world, and I'm not going to lie, I can see the opposite happening too. Don't think anything's guaranteed here. You know, I'm not making any predictions about, you know, in terms of what's going to happen come the end of the season, because, you know, I can see a scenario where Celtic push Rangers close and don't win the league this season. Like, I can see that almost as equally as I can see us pushing on and
I agree.
I have to be honest with you.
There's everything's gone against us again this season, hasn't it? When you look at the amount of injuries and other stuff, you know, players not quite bedding in time, having to assemble a full squad, and he's still done really well so far. And he speaks so often about giving yourself a chance, sticking in when it's difficult, and giving yourself a chance later on. And we did that in the League Cup, and hopefully we're going to do that this season as well. And hopefully we're looking back at those December matches when it was difficult and we had no strikers and Leila Bado or David Turnbull was up front and we found a way to win. So, exciting.
You know what else is interesting about this winter break? I think for obvious reasons, the first half of the season was directly compared to last season. I think the second half of the... Because the standard's been raised now. I think Ange has raised the standard again at Celtic. I think some of the players have raised the standard again at Celtic. You know, the likes of Kyogo, you know, Callum McGregor's back in form. He's our captain now. When you raise that standard, the expectation rises too. So the second half of this season is going to be compared to the first half of this season now, rather than last season, which I think brings in a new element of pressure, a good pressure, because you're wanting to be consistently raising the bar and moving on to the next level. I think it brings a new level of pressure again to the Celtic squad. And from the evidence I've seen, I do think they can rise to the challenge. You know, I'm not petrified about the next few months by any means. But, you know, it's just interesting that, you know, we had this break, and I think it was, you know, it's like a defining break. And I think that all comparisons to the Neil Lennon side of last season will just be pushed aside now. Everyone will be comparing the next few months at Celtic to the last few months at Celtic, and that's a good thing, because that's what we need. We need that consistency in results. We need that forward progress.
We do indeed. Right, just got a couple of comments in. We are 6 points better off, one cup in the bag, total turnaround from last season. Mazar bringing up the Aussie tour, that I think definitely sounds like a plan. Chat about postponing games as well when those matches come up. That's a story that's just going to rumble on, I think. But Monday night, John, we're not going to have you on the preview tomorrow. So how are you feeling generally about the Hibs game?
Yeah, I mean, fine. Excited about it, obviously. I think it'd be interesting to see what Maeda and Hatate bring. I'm expecting them to start that game.
Yeah.
I think those two will definitely start, and then we'll see what happens with Gucci, as he likes to be known, or apparently likes to be known. And I'm expecting a good open game, actually. I think Hibs will be a different prospect to the League Cup final. I think Maloney's kind of already started to turn them around a little bit. Mm-hmm. I think they've made a few signings, but I think a couple of them won't be ready for Monday's game, which is good. But they are missing a couple of key players. They're missing Ryan Poteas, they're missing Paul McGinn. So they've got issues of their own. But I don't think they're going to come to Celtic Park and defend. I think Maloney's got a similar outlook in the sense that he wants to establish a way of playing at Hibs, regardless of the opponent, much in the same way that we went away to Bayer Leverkusen and I went away to Real Betis and tried to play attacking football. So I think it'll be an open and exciting game. And, you know, I'm expecting 3 points. There's no doubt about it.
Pace as well. Martin mm-hmm. Boyle and Kevin Nisbet both have a lot of it, so it's going to be a tough one, but it's all set up to be a cracker as things get back underway. I think we'll leave it there, unless you've got mm-hmm. anything else you want to add.
Nope, just that it's been a weird kind of winter break, and just dying to see Celtic back in action. That's my big message going into this week.
Yes, we'll have a big preview to the Hibs game tomorrow with me and Stevie, and then obviously reactions and all that kind of stuff on Monday night. So thanks for watching this once again. It's really appreciated, and there's loads to chat about with regards to Celtic, because it's all about to get underway again.